Hello and welcome to Linux Lads Season 7, Episode 12. You're all very welcome. As usual, I'm Shane and I'm joined by Mike.
Hello.
Connor.
Hello, hello.
And Amulet.
What's up?
So, just to break the mold, yeah. we've got a few things to talk about, so we'll just get right into it, I suppose. Amulet, I'll go to you first. GitLab to delete dormant repositories in free accounts, but then reverse that decision the next day. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So on August 4th, the Register reported on an internal discussion within GitLab about plans to delete repositories that had been inactive for a year or more, specifically on free GitLab accounts. They found that those repositories accounted for up to 25% of GitLab's costs, and deleting them could save up to $1 million a year, which is significant savings. And they plan to roll it out in September. But because of this leak on the Register, there was massive online backlash. And the day after, on the 5th, they announced different plans, that they're going to move unused repositories to object storage, so they'll still be accessible, but take longer to access after a long period of inactivity.
It's just one thing. So, the Dublin Linux community that some of us are part of, the websites on that, the way it's hosted, is basically using GitHub pages. And I made a static site generator. You make a page by creating a markdown file, push it to GitLab, and that creates a new that basically creates the website. That CI/CD pipeline just takes care of all the building, and you have a static site on that infrastructure under our domain. Right now, the thing about that is I don't exactly know what they mean by dormant pages, because we don't update that website very often. It just sits there, has got our information, anything important, but it's not very dynamic. There's no new information, there's no new posts. Though that means that there's also no commits. So if that would be dormant, and if they don't take into account that people visit the website every now and then, we might have to look into a different kind of hosting, because even if it takes, instead of immediate, if instead of immediately the site is available after, let's say, 5 seconds, because they put it on some cold storage, not cold storage, but some Glacier storage or whatever, it would be not desirable. So this is actually something that that can have some, yeah, I will basically have to look into, and it might affect some stuff. Otherwise, this website is actually our Linux Lads website is actually using that infrastructure as well. But because we commit to it whenever we create a new episode, and it's not hosted on GitLab pages because we have to host the audio files, so it uses that infrastructure. But there are fairly frequent commits into it, so that shouldn't be affected. Definitely, we don't leave it a half year without an episode. So, yeah.
So you're saying the static site generator is the one that doesn't have much activity?
Well, the static site in the Dublin Linux case.
Oh,
The static site generator is basically the website, right? So what happens is that the CI/CD, the build mechanism on GitLab, you push a new commit, and it uses the static site generator to recreate the whole website, right? So it doesn't matter if you push a new web page or if you push update to the static site generator. It's the same thing from the point of view of the build mechanism. It's actually quite good. I really like the way it works, because it means you don't even have to do anything locally. You can just open GitLab on your web browser, edit a markdown file, make a commit, and it builds itself. It's amazing, and I understand why they want to save costs. And did you say $1 million?
Mm-hmm. Potentially that, around there ish.
Yeah, I mean, that they are no Google, right? And that has a lot of money. So I understand why they want to do it. If that did affect us, all we need to do, obviously, is just make a commit, a change every now and then something, just to keep it updated. It is an interesting thing, and it is a big chunk of change.
Yeah. So you're saying it's the Dublin Linux community website that could be affected, not the Linux Lads website.
No, not the Linux Lads one. Yeah, sorry. I'm not expressing myself clearly. So the Dublin Linux one, because there's not much happening on it. It's basically just information about the Dublin Linux community. There are no commits to it, right? Because there's no updates on it. So it just stays there. People visit it, get the information, and they join our Telegram or Matrix or whatever, or come to the meetups, right? Go to the meetup page. I'm pretty sure that the last commit was more than half a year ago. So I'd
imagine you could do something simple that doesn't make any huge visual difference, like before the full stop at the end of a sentence, just add an extra space character or something like that.
Absolutely. You can definitely.
And then the next time you just set a timer and they're like, okay, the next time we go around and just remove that space character. Like, so you're infinitely just adding space character, removing space character, and that looks like a commit to the system or something like that.
And it doesn't even have to be an actual commit to the repository. For the original, when they were actually going to delete dormant repositories, they said that a single comment, commit, or new issue posted to the project was sufficient to keep it alive. So it doesn't even have to be a change to the code or the website or anything.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, from my point of view, I know it caused an uproar online and everything, but from my point of view, that actually makes a lot of sense. From what I can see, it makes a lot of sense. If you can't even muster enough energy to update a README every half a year, then I guess your project is dead, maybe, you know, clone it and keep it somewhere where you can have access to it. Or maybe we need archive.org for software. I don't know if archive.org themselves do Git repos, but, you know, it's not fair of us. It's not fair to expect a company, specifically a small one the size of GitLab, to keep archiving everyone's software. It is beneficial. It should be definitely preserved. But should they be the ones who are expected to do it? I don't know.
Yeah. It's like, if your project is officially dead and nobody's monitoring anything, then you're not going to be able to make those commits or any sort of updates. So, you know, if at least one person in your project is still at the reins, then you're in no danger, really.
And let's not forget as well, like their number one competitors is Microsoft-owned GitHub, which is rolling in cash, right? So I'd rather GitLab as a company functioned, efficiently, or, I'd rather they were a bit ruthless with it, but kept the service up, rather than them just not making it, you know, too much expensive, have to go under or have to go fully commercial paid repos only. And suddenly GitHub would be the only kind of place where you can store software, or, you know, the only place that offers VCS service. No, don't know.
Okay. So I think maybe we'll move on to something else. Connor, I'm going to go to you next. You were trying out NixOS. I'm actually curious about this because I don't know the first thing about NixOS, to be honest with you. So I'm curious to hear what you thought.
Nor did I. I up until recently, and I don't think it's a new thing, but I just wasn't aware of it, that I assumed that NixOS was just like an Arch install, like you go through and then it's all command line and everything. So I was kind of going, oh, that's interesting, but it doesn't really appeal to me. And then I found out that there's a GUI installer. And I'm not saying the GUI installer is necessarily breaking news, but I just wasn't aware of it. So I was like, oh, GUI installer, I'll try that out. And it's Calamaris, which is very interesting. I even made myself some notes here. So on the installation, the installer, the r/ environment, live environment didn't detect my laptop trackpad. Interesting enough, so I just plugged in a wireless mouse with a dongle. Listed in the installer was the Enlightenment desktop environment as well as Pantheon. So if you want to install those, they were in the installer. There was a non-free disclaimer during the installation, which I thought was interesting, that if you would like to enable non-free repositories for your graphics drivers or something like that, it was a checkbox, but it was an opt-in rather than an opt-out. Nothing else really to speak of from the installer point of view. It was pretty much standard Calamari's, worked quite well. Once installed, I went for KDE Plasma. So it was a very minimal KDE Plasma installation. Didn't even include KDE Discover, which I suppose would make sense from the Nix package management point of view. But again, this is me just making notes as I was discovering things. Did have a user manual, which was quite extensive. It was just a HTML user manual, so just opened up in Firefox. Covered a lot of things, so which is good, because I'd imagine that Nix do things quite differently, and if you are not familiar with anything, having a good documentation is always good. So the documentation was quite extensive, which was good to see. I stated that it didn't have a lot in the base image. It was just plain vanilla KDE Plasma. Didn't seem to have it had things like Kate and console and things like that, but besides that, not much else. So I was like, okay, well, what if I want to install Brave, the web browser, or something like that? So how am I going to install a package? I like GUI installers, so I looked up the command for adding a package. It gave Thunderbird as an example, so I just inserted Discover because I wanted a GUI installer into the command, and it worked. Discover, needless to say, was having a real hard time because NixOS is quite different. So Discover wasn't able to go off and actually install things. I even tried FlatHub with using the installation instructions. Involved editing the Nix configuration file, which I guess is their way to do things. And that worked, but I just found the overall experience for me was super clunky and not worth it. I guess the reproducible build recipe kind of vibes that they're going for, i.e. their configuration file. Once you have a configuration file and you say, I like Firefox, I like whatever, I like to install Steam, I like to install whatever, and then you can have a super tailored file, and then once you have that, then you could reproduce that build no matter where you are. I get that, but for me, it would take a lot of commitment, and it would mean that if that idea appeals to you and you want to go down that road, you'll become super enamored by it. And for me, it just wasn't for me. I'm not criticizing it, it's just struck me as being a bit too different from what I'm used to, but I could definitely see the appeal of it.
What would be like what's the main kind of USP of NixOS?
It's for, so you have you declare it using a specific programming language, which I think is also called Nix, as a file, And whenever you create any, whenever you install the operating system or do anything to it, you change a file. I think you need to reboot. And it's exactly the same every time from the same file. So if you declare that you want this version of this package, you always get that the same dependencies. It behaves different. It behaves the same. So I tried it myself as Connor, like, well, I see, I don't know, I'm with Connor, like on the desktop. So Calamaris, it's fantastic. Coming from Fedora, like that's a heaven of a installer. Mm. It's just, I don't think you can.
The Fedora installer, it takes a lot to be desired, but if Fedora just switched over to Calamaris, then they would have a good time. Calamaris is vastly superior.
I think they are going to. Anyway, I hope they are going to, because that's like the one bugbear if you are installing Fedora. Anyway, so then you get, I have chosen the GNOME image for Nix. Ran it, installed properly. It got stuck on 46% or something for about 5 minutes. But I installed, it rebooted. I didn't get any Wi-Fi, even though previously I specified that. There's always something that I look into when I reinstall operating systems, because I think that kind of information should persist. But I didn't. All right. I ran into the same issues. GNOME software, I think, was actually installed, but you couldn't use it for anything because I don't know if there's a way to get it working with the Nix package manager. But the command line worked. I installed a package that needed a systemd unit. Systemctl, I just didn't work. You specified, I looked it up, and you specified systems like these services in the configuration file, and then it worked properly. When I got stuck and decided I don't have the time for it, it was NVIDIA. I have a hybrid laptop, and I looked at the instructions, and I'm just thinking, well, I'm not going to really commit to it. I'm not going to really use this. So I'm just going to give it a miss. Because on Fedora, NVIDIA kind of just works these days. Or maybe you just need to install one or two things, right? In there, that was like a page. And I don't know if the page was up to date. I don't know if I would get into any, you know. Reproducible builds is one thing. Reproducible documentation, that's another way altogether. So that's where I got stuck. But I continued with it is the actual package manager. So you can use NixOS as an operating system, or you can just use the package manager on any operating system as long as it's macOS or Linux, or maybe WSL as well. I don't know. So what you can do, you can install Nix package manager on Fedora, for example. You have to disable SE Linux because otherwise it won't work. But then it functions a bit like a secondary package manager that still supports the reproducible builds. So if you want to have a development environment, for example, and you would be using normally like virtualenv for Python, you can use this instead. And you specify the configuration file. As long as the packages are in there, in their package repository, you can start developing. You can put the configuration file into Git, I'd imagine, and share it with other people. And if you have a bunch of developers, I think that's the idea anyway. I don't know how well it's done in practice. If you have a bunch of developers working on the same thing, you can guarantee that they all have the same development environment, because NixOS comes obviously with the packages and with a shell environment, which is similar to virtualenv. So you kind of, it's not quite a containerized environment, I think, but it is similar. So there is some value in it, and it works across platforms. Across hardware, obviously, I think, and it has got its uses. But I've read online as well a lot of criticism that the benefits that you get from it for development don't actually outweigh the complexity that it brings. Because instead of you developing or doing whatever the way you are used to, suddenly the whole team has to relearn to something they've never used before, which has got its own complexity. So I don't know. You know, we all listen to JB shows, and they really love it over there. I didn't see anything that would necessarily mean like, yeah, this is so awesome that I'm going to be using it for everything. I'm going to use the package manager, but
I could see reproducible builds being very useful for being able to replicate bugs on historical versions of software, for example. But on a desktop, I don't know. I don't see the big appeal for it, for me personally.
I think what's actually probably going to, I mean, what I can imagine is you just install it in something like DistroBox or you just Nix Package Manager. And then if that kind of thing matters to you, you can use it within the scope of your current operating system. Yeah, I don't know, but some people really like it. Like, it has got a lot of people following it, being really enthusiastic about it. So I don't want to knock it. My experience with the actual operating system was like, meh, all right.
One thing, before we move on, one thing I will say is because that didn't last very long, I was trying that out on my laptop. I actually tried out Gruda Linux. So I have some very brief notes before we move on Gruda Linux. It's based on Arch, so same thing, Hello Kind of Modernist installer. So some nice tools, really nice tools post installation. I went for the XFCE desktop environment this time, mainly because the KDE version is quite in your face with the theming, so I wanted something a bit more muted. There's quite a lot of GUI configuration tools, which I was pleasantly surprised by. I mean, I'm running Endeavor OS on my PC at the moment, so the Endeavor OS is quite minimal in comparison, and that's not necessarily a criticism, but this was had a lot of customizations, a lot of GUI configuration tools. There was post setup guides. Which I found was interesting. They even had in the post setup guide was like, which GUI package manager would you like to install? Tick, and then it went off and installed it. I'd say not very new user friendly, because a lot of those things they would have no idea what it is. So maybe for a medium to advanced user, they would find a lot of these tools useful. For a new user, they would find all of these options overwhelming, I would imagine. Did notice quite a fair bit of bloat, but I suppose this is Linux, it's not Windows. You can always remove the bloat afterwards, but I suppose it's also nice to not have it there in the first place. Very pleasantly surprised by Gruda Linux. I think I might keeping it on the laptop at least for the time being, because it's not too dissimilar from what I'm running on my desktop, which is Endeavor OS. They're both Arch based. I hadn't tried out Gruda Linux before, and I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah,
that's a gamer focused distro, isn't it?
Can be, yeah. Mm. I think they've different flavors on their website.
Oh, okay. So I think we'll move on. Mike and Amleth were trying Neovide. Am I saying that right?
I think so, yeah.
I have no idea. I've never heard it pronounced. You're the first person that I heard it say.
There's a lot of bullet points after that, but I think I'll let you guys do the talking there.
Sure. So Neovide is a graphical front end for NeoVim. NeoVim is a text-based editor, while NeoVim is an editor that runs in your terminal, while NeoVide is a graphical application. And that allows it to have some really nice animations for when your cursor jumps around and such. And that makes it a lot more intuitive and less jarring when you jump between really far apart positions in a file, like from line 1 to line 100 or something. There's an animation for that cursor jump, so you can see where your cursor was and where it's going. And there's some other nice things too. I think Mike tried it more than I did, though. What did you think?
I liked it, and I had some issues. So I like NeoVim. So NeoVim is obviously a kind of iteration on Vim with improvements. A lot of emphasis on language server protocol integration. So you can get, if you are into programming, you can basically, with a little bit of effort, you can turn NeoVim and any of the NeoVim frontends you can turn them into a pretty decent competitor to VS Code for many use cases, right? So that's the kind of not quite IDE, but really advanced text editor. You know, you can have a file manager in it and everything, right? So I opened it. The Neovite is written in Rust, so that I kind of, you know, there is the connections. Rust is really fast. I don't know if it's always valid, but it is in Rust and it is really fast. The problem with it that I found is that on GNOME, which is the only desktop environment that I use, the top bar is always white, no matter what you team, right? And that to me is distracting. The reason for it is not necessarily their fault. It's GNOME not supporting some Wayland extension, and they require the Wayland extension to style that top bar. So that's kind of annoying. I keep comparing it to GNVim, which is another NeoVim frontend, also written in Rust, but also using, I think, GTK4 or GTK3, or probably GTK4, right? So GNVim, better integrated, but doesn't have those nice features. And it is really like an icon. Imagine that you are on line one, and you in the top left corner, you want to jump in the bottom right corner. So that's obviously one command. But instead of your cursor just disappearing from here and appearing from the other corner, you can see the trace of it in, like, you know, sparkly lines kind of thing or whatever. There's a few themes, and that's really nice. You can get used to it quite fast, right? Like, you know, and then you start missing it if you don't have it. There are other, like, animated window opening and so on. It is a really nice idea. It's just I find that top bar really distracting. And I obviously used it on macOS as well, and that's the only NeoVim clone there, where you couldn't copy and paste straight from keyboard, which on Linux worked. So, you know, there are differences between these things, even though if you look like NeoVim frontends, you probably get like a million of those. But I wish somebody did like one that would be really good for me, and I don't have the knowledge or the skill or the time even to even begin to contemplate how one would do it. But it is having said that, it is really nice. I'm really glad to see that people who take something that's usually considered like, yeah, it's a Vim, it's only for neckbeards who don't really care about how things look. That's I'm really glad that somebody's combating that bullshit, because there are a lot of text editors and a lot of people who really need them and a lot of people who work with them. And the fact that somebody's making them ergonomic and good looking, that's really important.
Neovite definitely has some nice shiny stuff. But I think the shiny animations are actually an improvement for usability. When you're jumping between sections of code, it's pretty in a text-based, like in a terminal, it's pretty easy to lose your cursor. And that animation makes it really easy to find where your cursor is and track it as you're jumping through your code. So some people might say, oh, it's a useless animation. It's fluff. I don't need that. But it's actually very helpful.
There is something, and this is why, like, I think GNOME recently introduced some improvements to accessibility now. And like generally, I think that's one of places where Linux should, or generally software should improve, especially software that's used by, that's created to use by professionals. Because if everything is dark, and you have your dark themes, and everything is now like, you know, brown and gray on black, and let's say you don't see red colors very well, right? So, then and because you have syntax highlighting where all your strings are red, for example, suddenly you're looking at a screen and you're getting really frustrated because you don't know where your cursor is, you don't know what text says, and so on. So really, it's really important that these things are getting that the visuals on them are getting think about, and you know, that people are making new ways of making things easier. And to be honest, iCandy is good. Even on its own, it's good to have iCandy. Like,
it's pleasant.
Otherwise, you know, not everybody can. Yes, exactly. Not everybody can spend 10 hours a day looking at XFCE. Come on.
I'm not going to switch from Emacs, but Neovite is definitely a very pleasant experience.
I'm sure there must be a front end like that for Emacs.
Emacs is a graph. It can be run in both a 2E mode, so it's inside a terminal. But by default, it's actually a GTK application on its own. But I've looked into animations like this in the past, and they don't exist. I'm not sure why, whether it's a limitation in the architecture of Emacs or what, but I would definitely be interested in seeing something like this for Emacs.
You just need to implement your own Valent compositor inside Emacs. And then some make it loop it from within to outside. I really enjoyed the experience using it. If it wasn't for the bar in GNOME, and I get to think from something that Connor posted, was it Connor or somebody posted in the chat somewhere about GNOME being. Or maybe it was somebody else and somewhere else, I don't know. Basically, there is an article from some Linux desktop user and developer who is really not happy with the way Wayland is, according to them, created to work for GNOME mostly. So everything that GNOME uses is in the core, and everything else is extensions that GNOME is not implementing. So I don't know how much truth that is, because I don't have, you know, I don't have the way of using it, or looking into it, but it does affect things.
The only other thing I would like to mention as kind of a follow-up to the GitLab stuff is GitT is a self-hosted Git hosting platform, and they've been very actively working on ActivityPub support. And what ActivityPub would facilitate is allowing someone on their personal GitT instance to open issues and collaborate with projects on other instances. At the moment, if you want to contribute to someone's project and they're using a self-hosted GitT instance, then you have to create an account on their instance for every single one. And that's a whole lot of accounts. But the ActivityPub Federation issue would eliminate that, allow you to have your account on your local instance and contribute to any of the others. And they've actually gotten I think there are two instances where there's a semi-working demo right now. I'll have to find a link and put it in the show notes, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Open decentralized social networking protocol is ActivityPub, according to Wikipedia. I'm just looking at it. I'm thinking, what, another one?
ActivityPub is what's behind Mastodon and Pleroma and Miski and Mobilizon and PeerTube and now GitT and a whole bunch of systems.
So that about wraps it up. Glad you could join us this time. Talked about a lot of random shit. So as usual, you can get us on Telegram, Twitter's still a thing, yeah? Mastodon. You can email us on show@linuxlads.com. You can find all of our social links on linuxlads.com/contact. Just to remind you, we have a Steam group where we don't game as much lately, but who knows, maybe when the weather gets a bit colder, we will game a bit more. And we have a Discord as well, as we talked about last week. So if you want to join the Discord, why not? Go ahead. But mainly it's Telegram, Twitter, Mastodon. That's where you'll hear about the new episodes. And Matrix, of course.
We also have XMPP server.
That's a new thing. That's actually prompted from last week's discussion. Yeah.
And the XMPP.
I mean, the last week that was about a month ago.
I think we're getting slightly better at releasing them on the two-week schedule. That was. Slightly.
Yeah.
I think the last time we recorded was about 2 weeks ago. So I think we're doing okay. Or was it?
No. Well, at least three. Anyway.
Anyway, so that about wraps it up for us. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye. See you in approximately X amount of weeks.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.